This evening we will be talking some about, and does your child's world scare you? Health concerns. Health concerns. You know, most of us, I don't know if all of us do or not, I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but most of us have the benefits of some kind of health coverage, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance, insurance provided by an employer, or insurance that we pay part of it and the employer pays part of it. And yes, I know insurance costs have gone up and they're continuing to do so, unfortunately. But health concerns are something that involve not only the healthcare system and insurance and availability of healthcare for us and for children, but also health concerns have to do with the abuse of health. And unfortunately, some of the statistics that we're going to see here show that that is continuing. In some areas it's dropped, in other areas it is on the rise. In 2009, there was a Tennessee report on the healthcare system, and I want to read that, at least the beginning of it. In the past 50 years, the United States has built a series of modern networks essential to our economy and our quality of life. Our power grid, phone systems, see these things, I've told you before, I can be sitting in a deer stand out in the middle of the woods somewhere and I get a phone call. Yeah, it's on vibrate. Water systems, interstate highways, and the internet. With health care coverage, however, we're stuck in the 1940s because we never built a modern health care infrastructure to cover everyone. And this is a report from the state of Tennessee, their opinion of that. What we have is the equivalent of scattered wells, individual generators, and county roads. No system for making sure all people have health coverage. Experts feel the U.S. healthcare system is unstable because of what they call the missing pillars problem. Insured people are the pillars who hold up the healthcare system by paying for healthcare. People without insurance still use the healthcare system, but they are the missing pillars, not paying regularly and not helping support the system. Tens of millions of missing pillars are threatening the stability of the healthcare system. Healthcare reform in America requires solutions to get everyone to participate in a healthcare system which will make healthcare more efficient and affordable for us all. Now is the time for the private sector to come together with the public sector in a common vision to address the problem and protect our nation's shared quality of life. That was the beginning of a report on the healthcare system in Tennessee and their opinion of the healthcare system in the United States, and projections that within the healthcare system, unfortunately, there will be lots and lots of people who are missing and who miss out. The World Health Organization, if you look here, and I know the book talks some about these things, but I tried to get some more recent statistics. Some of those are 2009, some of them are 2010, some are 2008. But the World Health Organization defines health as, quote, a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity, end of quote. We oftentimes think of health care as something that I break an arm, I break a leg, I have a heart attack, I have another disease, and that's what the healthcare system is for. But the healthcare system is more than just our physical well-being. The healthcare system is supposed to be out there to at least help us with other areas as well, mental, social well-being. If our bodies hurt, our emotions, our mental state oftentimes suffers as well, as do others around us. According to the 2010 census, there were 74.2 million children in the United States. So in 10 years, there are 1.9 million more children in the U.S. than there were 10 years ago. Now, birth rate has dropped. You might say, boy, that's a lot of kids. Birth rate's actually come down from what it was. But this number is projected to increase to 87.8 million in 2013. In 2010, children made up 24% of the population, down from, in 1964, 36% of the population. So children, the births of children, their birth rates are going down. But at the same time, what is increasing, other than cost? People like me. We with my increasing gray hair. We're living longer. The baby boom generation is living longer. And if healthcare improves as it was a couple of years ago, the projections were that our current high school and freshmen in college could expect a lifespan on average of 120 to 125 years old. And I said, when I first read that a couple of years ago, I said to some students in a classroom, they were talking about some things with healthcare, and I said, but just think. Y'all might live to be 125 years old, but you can't retire until you're 105. that is a downer. But healthcare needs and healthcare system involves a lot of different things. Everything from safe sleeping practices for infants to immunizations to prevent illnesses and avoid long-term healthcare costs. Obesity, fighting obesity, those kinds of things, which sometimes lead to chronic illnesses and which are starting earlier and earlier in life. So healthcare concerns are something that affect not just the individual children, though that is a major concern, but healthcare costs and healthcare issues affect society as a whole. I just don't understand. I know it's probably more now, but when my father had cancer and he was, I think it was the Neulasta shots he was taking, but something along those lines that they were giving $10,000 a shot. And he had to take them at the beginning of the week, every week that he started having chemo. The fortunate thing in all of that was that the American Cancer Society at the time was paying for his protocol. I couldn't imagine if insurance and or he had to pay for that. I know there are many people who do, and I know there are people who don't get treatments because of rising health care costs. And I know there are folks that use the ER as a doctor's office, which drives up some of the health care costs as well, in some instances because they don't have insurance or don't have the ability. Otherwise, if at all possible, I will tell you, if at all possible, especially in the winter and bad weather in the winter, if you can do anything and wait to get to the doctor's office on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday night, for some reason, even Mondays are in there, don't go to the ER because it's full of folks who are getting in off the streets and full of people when the child gets sick, they bring the child to the ER. Instead of the doctor's office. But that does say something about our need to care for and to do some improvements with health care, regardless of what you think about the current health care debates. There have to be debates. We can't continue going on as things have always been. More and more, you may know, more and more, who decides how long you stay in the hospital? Yes, the insurance company, not the doctor. The insurance company. In the 2010 census, 54% of U.S. children were white, non-Hispanic. 23% were Hispanic, 14% black, 4% Asian, 5% were all other races combined. In 2010, 66% of children ages 0 to 17 lived with two married parents. In 1980, 77% lived with two married parents. So there are other demographic shifts that affect health care for children and for others. Increases in births to unmarried parents or unmarried women are among the many changes in American society. Children of unmarried mothers are at a higher risk of adverse birth outcomes, such as low birth weights, and that's in large part because a lot of the unmarried women don't get the prenatal care that's needed. Infant mortality is higher than those in general who are married mothers. They're also more likely to live in poverty than children of married mothers. Infants born preterm or with low birth weight are at a higher risk of early death and long-term health and developmental issues. Now, that doesn't always equate, but most of the time, these days it seems to. The good news is the percentage of infants born preterm has declined in 2009 down to 12.2% from a high of 12.8% in 2006, though the low birth weight didn't really change. And that has to do a lot with the ability to get prenatal care, etc. The percentage of children who are Hispanic has increased faster than any other racial or ethnic group. In 1980, 9% of the child population in the United States were Hispanic. In 2010, 23.5% of children in the United States are Hispanic. In 2023, the projections are less than half of the children in the United States will be white non-Hispanic by 2023. In 2009, though, 90% of children had health insurance coverage at some point during the year, whether it was through health insurance coverage by parents, health insurance from the schools. You know, you can buy some health insurance when you go to school. It covers predominantly accidents, but other things can happen in there as well that can be covered. So the good news is that in 2009, 90% of children had some kind of health care coverage during the year. The bad news is that sometimes that wasn't, they weren't covered the whole year. They were just covered part of the year, and for some reason insurance was dropped or lapsed or whatever. Since 1987, at least 85% of all children in the U.S. have had health insurance. So that's a positive for that 85 to 90%. It's a negative for the others. The number of children without health insurance in 2009 was 7.5 million. That's 10%. 7.5 million in the United States with no health insurance whatsoever. No ability if they go for that to be covered. And 60% of children were covered by private health insurance, 37% by public health insurance during that time. The type of insurance varied by the age of the child. Younger children were more likely to have public health insurance than older children. And older children were more likely to have private health insurance. So there are some trade-offs there. However, health care is a major concern, whether public or private, with children. Because what happens is if they get sick, if children don't have adequate health care, that then feeds into the next generation and the next generation as well. Now, who used to take care of health care issues in centuries and millennia past? Well, even before the family doctors. The mothers, the grandmothers. I will tell you this. Most of the time, Dr. Grandmary is the one that gets the phone call before they ever go to the doctor. This is going on. What do we need to do? Their sons are, well, Stephen was 36 yesterday, and David will be 32 in July. So, you know, Dr. Grandmary gets the phone call most of the time before they go to the doctor or not. But it was that way. But even before that, you had the mothers and the grandmothers that did that. But when people got sick, where did they go? To whom did they go if they went outside the family? Well, depending on the country. And that may be more true than you think. Because within Judaism, they typically went to the rabbi and wanted the rabbi to hear their ills, pray for them, and do something to help make it better. In some cases in history, they went to the ministers of the local congregation. Why people think we got a better connection with God than they do, I don't know. But for some reason, some people do. And that's what they would do. Do what? Yeah, minor surgery. Barbers sometimes did that. As long as it wasn't a barber of Seville, you know, you didn't have a... He performed... yeah, but they did. All kinds of things. The barbers did that. And then the private health care doctors there are fewer and fewer of those. Fewer and fewer physicians are going into general practice these days. Does that surprise anybody in here? You go to the doctor and you get referred, right? Referred to a specialist, and that kind of thing. Well, that's sometimes more difficult with children because it's difficult to diagnose. It's difficult to keep up with which doctor's in charge. I said which, not which doctor, but which doctor is in charge. And a lot of times, especially when children are from a situation in life where perhaps it is from a family where there is maybe less education and less opportunity, the parents don't know, don't understand what the doctor... Anybody in here understands everything the doctor says to you? Yeah, they don't understand even less, which then makes it more difficult to make the decision for the child and to know what to do for the child. And that's why healthcare and healthcare advocates are also so important. And that's one of the things that perhaps we can do, not as a church as a whole, although we can be a resource sometimes collecting, and when we know that there are good physicians that will take care of folks. Yeah, I remember Dr. Hawkins, who delivered both of our children. David was his last delivery ever. He was that horrible? No. David, but he was going to retire. But yeah, he would come to the house. You'd go see him. But if you couldn't pay, you paid when you could. Now, when you go in for pre-op, they tell you how much you're going to owe if they're going to do that procedure, right? Up front. Yeah. The only time you get out of it is if they make the mistake and don't, and then you insist. And you sit there and say, well, nobody called me, nobody told me this, I guess I'll just cancel this procedure right here and there. And then we'll work it out. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's yeah. I had a potential heart issue, and we were in the middle of the night. Was it 2 years ago or last year? We got in the middle of the night. My heart was doing all kinds of strange things, and I'm lying in there in the chest pain center at Greenville Memorial at 3 o'clock in the morning. I tried to lay there and get it to stop, but it wouldn't. Never did figure out what it was, but I'm lying there. And we had been in the room for about 10 minutes, and somebody from the business office came in and said, okay, how are you going to pay the $500 that we know you're going to owe us?
And I said, get out.
Yes, and Mary said, get out of the room. And the woman said, but we're supposed to, and I was not very nice. I wasn't feeling, and I said, well, that's a holdover from Mr. Pinckney and his policies, who had been the CEO, Mr. Pinckney and his policies, and your current vice president for business affairs. And I know that with my insurance, there's a write-off. And I'm not going to pay you a dime until I know what the write-off is and then what they're going to pay, and then, based on my deductible and what I've met out of it, how much I'm going to have to pay.
If you overpay, you will never get it back.
Well, if you overpay, it'll take you forever. Yeah. And she said, but we're supposed to. I said, you need to leave. And then she started again, and Mary said, you need to leave. So she left. So, you know, that really is kind of... But health insurance coverage, in 2009, we said 90%. The usual source of health care, children ages 0 to 17 with no usual source of health care, 6% in 2009. The only category that really went down was children ages 19 to 35 months with vaccinations, 76% in 08, 2009, 70%. People are not getting vaccines. Some of that is bad press for vaccines. Oh, well, don't get that vaccine because it might cause... You know, if you read the possible side effects of an aspirin, you'd never take an aspirin either. But children are the future of not only this country, children, the future of the world as far as continuing things and keeping things going and building new and better items if we don't take care of the children and provide for their health care, their health concerns. Then the next generation is going to suffer, and the generation after that will suffer as well. I know that the church's business typically is thought of in terms of predominantly spiritual health, and while that is a major concern, I personally am that, and 75 cents at the Walmart will get you a drink at the drink machine. Other places will be more. Think that perhaps it's time for we as a church to kind of pool our collective thought processes and our connections and be a resource to help people who are in need find ways to get that help. I'm not saying that we go out and we pay their medical bills completely for them, but we help them find places where there are caring individuals that will, if they've got the ability to pay, fine, but if they don't have the ability to pay, still won't shortchange them simply because they can pay a third instead of the whole amount. I know that's a lot easier said than done. You can find some on the internet. You can, but I think, and you've got the public health departments, but even they are starting to charge for certain services now, certain vaccines and that kind of stuff. What was it? The flu shot that you could get for $20 at the Rite Aid at the health department was costing $35. But I think more than that is to find. To find those things, yes, on the internet, but to make connections with local physicians and local healthcare facilities and just collect information so that we can be a resource in that way. Whether the person ever darkens the door of the church or not to worship, at least they know that the church cares. Ministerial Association address is predominant, except for word of mouth if somebody comes to us as an individual, but no. And that's something I recently mentioned. Ministerial Association is really more involved in the food and helping people with rent, you know, utilities, that kind of stuff on a limited basis. But y'all are the Ministerial Association too, because y'all contribute. Well, yeah. Yeah,
they either have to go to St. Francis or Greenville Memorial so they can make it.
Well, the hospitals are doing that, and the hospitals are also trying to add to their staff so that they've got people there. But what happens when you go to see the hospitalist that used to have a private practice and now you're in the hospital? You go to the hospital to see them and they're connected with the hospital. Not only do you get a bill from them, but guess what? You get a bill from the hospital for seeing them as well. And I think we need to really be conscious of those kinds of things. Another thing we can do, and you can see some of the statistics here, and I know some people think that I give too many statistics sometimes. We won't call any names. But some of the other statistics here has to do with education and caring and talking with children, being open with them, smoking and children. Smoking has serious long-term consequences. Duh, we know that, right? But you got the camel guy, the camel that's dressed up like a hip dude smoking. Who's that really aimed at? Not the 40-year-old adult, unless they're still acting their shoe size instead of their age, but the teenager. No, that's right. Peer pressure is, you're right, Sybil, peer pressure is really tremendous when it comes to that, regardless of what we do. And I've had students in past years, and they come in, and you've got that little pinch between the cheek and gum, and they bring the little spit bottle and that kind of thing. And you know, I'll say, you know what that's doing? But I got a lot. I said, no. You ever seen pictures of teenagers or people in their early 20s who had oral cancer and the whole bone has had to been taken out and their face is all lopsided and everything else and they can't eat? That kind of stuff. But we try to keep people from seeing those kinds of things. Right. Yeah. You got smoking related diseases, premature death, health care costs, because smoking also contributes to such things as heart disease, lung disease. Smoking is a major contributor to colon cancer. People say, what? Yeah, it's a major contributor to colon cancer as well. All kinds of issues like that that crop up, and the earlier one starts. You know, I am fully convinced that my father would not have died at the age of 81 had he not smoked all of his life, because both of his parents lived into their 90s. Two of his sisters died from Alzheimer complications, one at 88 and one at 87. But he smoked all his life.
I think that secondhand smoke.
Secondhand smoke is a... Yeah. Well, my niece and my middle brother and his wife both smoke, and my niece... I would say I have never known a person, a child, up through adolescence, who had more sinus and respiratory issues and infections than my niece Christy Dawn. And she was in a house with two smokers. And all her grandparents smoked too when they were around. So, you know, we don't know. We don't know. But it creates all kinds of other issues, and I think if we can catch children early, just like the commercial that I've mentioned before, where you've got the boy sitting beside a tree with his dad, and the old commercial, and the dad, cigarette, puts it in his mouth, lights it, lays the pack down, and the little boy looks up and reaches over and picks up the pack of cigarettes and starts pulling one out. And I know it's hard to quit. I know it's hard to quit. I've not been there with cigarettes. I gave up a pipe. I did smoke a pipe for a while. I gave up the pipe when our children were little, because somebody said, "Don't you want to be around?" And but I know it was hard for my dad. It was hard for my brother. My brother tried to quit when my dad had colon cancer, and Mark quit for 2 months. Sheila said, "I'm not quitting." But I do know something that is difficult. One summer several years ago, my bride tried to decaffeinate me. I wasn't drinking, but... Well, some of both. I was drinking 30 cups or more of regular coffee a day, plus regular soft drinks and tea. And the doctor said, "You need to cut down." I was having some stomach trouble. He said, "You drink coffee?" I said, "Sure." He said, "How much?" I said, "Oh, 30 cups so a day." He said, "You need to cut down." So I said, "Okay, I'm going to cut down." Well, somebody said, "No, you're going to cut it out." And for about 3 weeks that summer, you didn't want to be around me. Mm-mm. So I understand even that, the caffeine stuff. But it's very, very difficult. One of every 6 deaths in the United States, latest statistics, is a result of tobacco use. 1 out of every 6 has to do with tobacco use. I know that I'm probably stepping on some toes. I've stopped preaching and gone to meddling for some folks. But, you know, that's... 90% of smokers start smoking by the age of 18. And of smokers under 18 years of age, more than 6 million will die prematurely because of that. In 2010, a survey was done among 8th, 10th, and 12th grade students. The percentages who reported smoking cigarettes daily in the past 30 days were a third to half the percentages of the same group in 96 and 97, and that's good, but they're still high. In 2010, 14% of white 12th graders reported smoking cigarettes daily, compared with 5% of black non-Hispanic and 6% Hispanic 12th grade students. But then again, you know, it's supposed to be the cool thing to do, right? That's what the tobacco companies would sell us on. But it leads to all kinds of other consequences. Of course, we know alcohol is very much a common occurrence. It seems to be a rite of passage for a lot of adolescents. Its use is associated with motor vehicle accidents. When I work at the hospital, most of the MVAs that come in, when I work a PRN at the hospital, most of the MVAs that come in have some connection one way or another with alcohol and or drug abuse, the vast majority of them. I still remember several years ago being at the hospital working one night, and a guy came in, he had wrecked his moped. His blood alcohol level, and he was in his 40s, his blood alcohol level was 2.5 times the legal limit. He wrecked the moped and went head first into a tree. He died about 2 weeks later, but family came in and laughed and said, well, you know, this is the 5th time in the last 2 years. Never wore a helmet. So, you know, you've got, it's related to MVAs. Other accidents and injuries and death. Sometimes in school, problems in schools, as well as the workplace. Heavy drinking declined from the most recent peaks of 13% for 8th grade students in 1996 to 7% in 2010. 7% of 8th grade students report that they drink heavily. 10th grade students, though it was 24% in 2000, 16% still in 2010, etc. And you can see some other statistics here on alcohol abuse and alcohol use. It's very, very easy to obtain. A lot easier than you think, even with all the safeguards that are put in. And it creates all kinds of other problems because liver issues, pancreas issues, in addition to certain cancers that are now traced to those kinds of things. And children of parents who regularly consume alcohol are significantly higher percentage-wise to start drinking early. Well, not just early in age, maybe sometimes early in the day as well. Drug use is another major concern, health concern. Sorry, it went over to the next page. In 2010, approximately 16 million Americans reported using prescription drugs for non-medical reasons in the past year. 7.5 million of those said in the past month. Prescription drugs for non-medical reasons. Drug use by adolescents can have a lot of different kinds of health issues. Health problems from eating disorders to disability to death. Marijuana use poses both cognitive and health risks. As I used to tell students sometimes, and the number of kids, even high school kids, that will brag about how often they use marijuana or other things, you probably wouldn't believe. They're very open about it. And one time I was dealing with some students, and I had gotten hold of a film, and I can't remember now where I got it, but it was a medical study and showed brain scans of adolescents who did not use marijuana and adolescents the same age who did. And the ones with the marijuana use, there were dark spots in the brain scans, whereas the others were white, whitish looking or light gray. There were dark spots, which means those synapses. It's not just the lung issues. And then sometimes I would get blunt not too blunt, but there was some, I said, well, guys, tell you this, I don't know about, there's no study on women, but there have been medical studies, fellas, those who regularly use marijuana are very likely to end up suffering impotence. What's that? That means that if you're with your wife and you want to express your love in a physical way, guess what? If you've been using marijuana regularly, you're probably not going to be able to do that. Oh. Yeah. Tell all your friends. Illicit drug use in the past 30 days increased from 8 to 10% among 8th grade students from 2009 to 2010. 10% of 8th grade students, 19% of 10th grade, and 24% of 12th grade students said they use illicit drugs or reported illicit drug use. Now, you think illicit drugs, okay, they were using cocaine and heroin and marijuana. Yes, some of them were. But the three drugs that are most abused among children and adults in the United States, opioids, and that doesn't mean Andy Griffith, opioids, that is, things prescribed for pain relief. Depressants, such as barbiturates, and benzodiazepines, prescribed for anxiety and sleep problems, often referred to as sedatives or tranquilizers, and stimulants, including things for sleep disorders, obesity, and there is an increased report. In 2010, there was an increased report of significant increase of students wanting to buy other students Ritalin in order to experience the effects on themselves when they didn't need it. And students selling their Ritalin in school to other students. Several years ago, students were, in fact, they banned, I don't have any, you know those Bic pens that had the, you know, the little clear tube to them and you could unscrew the thing? Students were, in some schools, there was an increase, students were getting inventive and they were taking different kinds of powder forms of drugs and putting them down in the pen and then putting the cap on it. And then during the school, they'd pull it out, stick it in their nose, and sniff it. Very inventive kinds of things. You do know that in a lot of schools, that the hand sanitizers that are alcohol-based are now banned. Because 2 years ago, they were finding a lot of students were taking that. It's alcohol-based. What were they doing? They were drinking it. I can't imagine, but they were drinking it for the alcohol in it. And having other adverse reactions and effects as well. So there are all of these kinds of things, and prescription abuse by 12th graders is on the increase. And where do they get it? You know, have you seen the signs now that says the billboards out there that have a prescription medication bottle that's turned over and said, you know, when you have your drug talk with your children, are you considering these? It is difficult to get rid of unused prescriptions. Well, we can recycle used motor oil, but we can't get rid of prescription drugs without. I'm trying to remember what it was. Which drug was it? Last year, I read a report outside of some major city in the Northeast. They were finding fairly significant traces of certain prescription drugs in the drinking water. Yeah, where people were flushing things down, and they said, "Don't flush your medications down the toilet." Of course, that kind of makes you wonder. You're flushing them down a commode, but then later it comes out as your drinking water. But okay. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that it has. In 2000, 43% of hospital emergency admissions for drug overdoses were because of misused prescription drugs. And it's going up and up every year. Education. Making sure that we lock things up where kids can't get them. And don't let them know where the key is, I guess. But A study conducted in 2006 found teens between the ages of 12 and 17 who used stimulants with epinephrine, or no, ephedrine, are more likely to use, if they're misusing them for non-medical, they're more likely to use other illicit drugs. So, you know, I guess putting the Sudafed behind the counter and locking it up is a good thing. Pseudoephedrine. In 2007, 2.7% of 8th graders in the U.S., 7.2% of 10th, and 10% of 12th graders had abused Vicodin. 5% of 12th graders at the time were abusing OxyContin for non-medical. It says something, though, about depression and about wanting to be stimulated and other things as well. And I know we're running short on time. Diet in children. In 2007-08, the average diet quality score for all age groups met or exceeded standards only for total grains. Only the youngest children, we got these fruit, vegetables again. Only the youngest children were getting the proper amounts of fruits and milk. The diet quality of the youngest children was better than older children for fruit, whole fruit, milk, sodium, etc. We know the consequences of obesity. We know that obesity carries with it high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, potential heart attacks, all those kinds of things. And yet, what do we look at on the sugars in the cereals? You know, we were talking about sugar a while ago. The cereals that typically have the most sugar in them have what? On the outside, they have cartoon characters like Lucky Charms and Tony the Tiger and Count Chocula and all these kinds of things. That plus the lack of physical activity. A lot of kids, their physical activity is this. And that's with video games or with, they open up this thing and they're doing this, and that's a physical activity. Fewer and fewer children are getting out and playing and getting the exercise they need. But part of that is because a lot of them are unsupervised. But part of that is because guess who else isn't getting out and doing it and pushing them to do it, playing with them any longer. There's some... Right. Well... Well, yeah, that's true, Sybil. It was safe to get out and play. And these days, you never know. But even within the school systems, there are more and more children that have been getting around physical education and physical activity over the years. They find ways to get around doing that kind of stuff. And teachers don't have the wherewithal that they used to have to make them do it. The consequences in the school system are not there. If the teacher tries to, the teacher can get in trouble instead of... I know we've talked about other things that scare us about our children's world, but quite frankly, I'm not so sure that some of these, and some of these issues lead to the other things about which we've talked. But I'm not so sure that starting with diet, exercise, educating children, talking with children about why the bad things that can happen if you do these things and the good things that can happen and be a part of your life if you have proper diet, if you get the exercise, if you, instead of smoking the cigarette, you're outside playing ball or you're doing something else. I'd rather them drink the sugary drink than pick up the cigarette or the other kinds of things. But I think it's all boils down in the long run to the R word. I know what that R word is. Well, responsibility is a part of it, but how do we get people to listen to us and to pay attention to us? And to be responsible, we develop relationships. Relationships. Relationships then lead to respect and responsibility. And I think that a lot of the things about our children's world, is there are things out there we can't change in and of ourselves. But there are many things that we can do as individuals, as a church, and as a community. If we will build relationships with each other and then build relationships with children and the parents of the children, then there are things that we can do, I think, to help the world. While the world is a scary place, and the world's going to always be a scary place because there are bad people and there are bad things that happen. But we can lessen that effect and we can better prepare our children so that they're not scared to move, so they're not scared to stand up and do what's right and say, I'm not going to do that because it might hurt me or somebody else. I don't live in a bubble. I don't think our children need to live in bubbles or be protected in ivory towers. But I think through relationship, and I really do think through partnerships between families, churches, and community groups, including the public schools and healthcare, we can help children make better choices, and we can help guide them to turn the corner in the proper direction instead of making the wrong turn. Right. Well, there are fewer families who are involved in churches and synagogues, and or they're involved only when it's convenient or there's a crisis. And what that does is teaches the children that religion's really not all that important. And the only time you need religion is when something really bad's happening and you can't figure it out yourself. That's why I think the church has to be some way, and I really don't have the magic bullet or the magic formula, but some way I think the church needs to be more involved in those kinds of things to give people that connection with a relationship that's not just for the moment and then you forget it, but a relationship on which you can build and is meant to be for a lifetime. That's right, Melissa. Right. And you know, I think that that kind of example, setting that kind of example, is really at the core of or the foundation of that. And where does that start? Start. Parent. Yep, parenting. I was going to say the H word, home, but the P word, parenting, Robert, that's
the problem today. We don't have parents.
Well, a lot of the kids have a friend, or there's a mother and a father, but it's not a mommy and a daddy. It's not a mommy and a daddy, and there is a difference. I've got a right. And I hope that our discussions won't end just with tonight and ending this book and ending this part of the study. I hope this can maybe, what we've done over the last several weeks, can maybe be a trigger or a catalyst for ongoing discussions at times and for building those relationships. And sometimes, whether you're the parent of that child or not, you may be the mommy or the daddy that they need at a given point in time, the relationship. Anyone else before we let the choir get over there, since it's 6 minutes till?
I think we're all powerful at times. Kids, no matter who kid it is, kids look at somebody's watching.
Well, they are. And if we treat them as if they're insignificant, they're going to know. And then they're not going to want to have relationships with other adults who can help. Thank you.
Been in the store
But I guess the question is, have you been standing there? You know that what they're buying is, they're too young to be buying, but you don't, do you say anything to the... Thank you. God bless you. Go in peace. And I look forward to more opportunities to gather together this week and beyond. Amen.